Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collin, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, so this week I'm actually in Toronto, Canada, where it is not springtime, as anybody living here will attest, and the photos of snow that I posted on Facebook will show. So I'm kind of working remote again, but what's happening in your studios? What's going on? I mean, we have lots of projects in studios. I'll mention a few, but it's all fun and exciting. What are you guys doing?
I'm doing a whole bunch of print work. Again, seems like
still,
more and more
wow.
of that. Yeah, still a lot of print work. And the last week or two was a good demonstration of why you should never burn bridges with old clients. I had a client. It's probably my longest serving client as a foundation in California. And what's interesting about them is their program officers. They can only serve for, I think it's like 5 or 6 years, and then they are forced to leave the foundation. Like that's part of the thing. So they spread out to the rest of the sort of country and world. And I have everybody I work with there, they end up bringing me along to all their new organizations as they hop around the country, which is fantastic. So I have tons of clients that sort of were born there. But anyway, I'm working with a couple who just called me out of the blue and said, hey, you know, I'm at a new place. You know, we'd love to get you in.
We have a term for that. I have a term. I don't know if it's a we thing, but I call it executive migration.
That's okay. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wait for them to migrate to another corporation or company or position. And then, you know, we get to pick up basically another client.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's how my business grew during the recession. When my big companies went away, those people who were laid off during that time started their own businesses or went with other smaller, more nimble companies. And my business grew enormously during the recession.
That's fantastic. What's happening in your studio?
Well, I'm working on print projects, of course, templates, a sales presentation with a lot of custom. I'm doing a lot of Photoshop work because it's a tech health company and they have a lot of screen images. So, you know, we're creating a lot of computer monitors, phones, tablets, that type of thing with their screenshots, also animating it. And speaking of animation, Steffi Lewis with the presentation, well, she's a director at the Presentation Guild, but she also has her own business called the Presentation Workshop. She has a tutorial, if you want to look it up, on scrolling screenshots in a complex background environment in PowerPoint. It's very helpful if you want to see it.
It is good. And Steffi's site is fantastic. She does really good. She's been doing some really good tutorials, really direct and very clear. So Sandy, you're doing a lot of print in PowerPoint, right?
That's right. In PowerPoint.
Anne K. Emery, who's a really great data visualization person and trainer, has a great blog. It's annekemery.com. She posted a guest post a week or so ago on how to create print reports in PowerPoint. And it was very good. I tweeted it out and we'll include the link to it. So it was a nice,
great
nice
idea.
Article on how to do it.
How about you, Troy?
Well, outside the fact that I'm in Toronto and spring is definitely not here, meaning I didn't dress appropriately for this cold weather, setting up for a show in Japan, which is going to be it's going to be a cool meeting. We're running English and French presentations in sync. So I have multiple screens and I get to spread my imagery across it doing that. We're doing lots of traditional, what I'll call traditional design as well as not presentation. We have a lot of video segment packages we're building out right now for a president's club. We just got done with a print job, but ironically, it's for luggage tags for another event that contact us. We're doing some large format printing. The other thing we're doing is not on the print, but we're getting these print files in InDesign, one of my favorite programs, and we're basically reverse engineering them to become PowerPoint presentations.
Yes.
Because their designers know InDesign, and we're like, just give it to us so we know what it should look like. We'll make it work for your presentation team. So yeah, we're doing a lot of that right now as well. It's overall busy.
That is the template I'm working on right now is I'm reverse engineering it from InDesign. I love doing it. I think it's fun.
All right. So what's been going on in the presentation world in terms of news? Troy, you got anything?
You know, this is presentation world because we're talking about presentation people. Dave Peretti lives outside of the Toronto area. PowerPoint MVP based in Canada. He's one of two up here, I believe. Had the opportunity to have dinner with him and his wife, and it was wonderful. Thanks, Dave, for driving over, picking me up, and picking a restaurant. He also reported a presenter view bug about when you're escaping from a linked presentation. So he was using one presentation linked to another presentation, and then when you escape back, it takes you to the first presentation. Well, in presenter view, you lost presenter view on your monitor in front of you. The audience stayed in sync. Now, the bug was interesting because I can't think of when I had done a linked presentation within presenter view. I use linked presentations quite often for projects, but usually sales teams, and it's you're showing your direct monitor or mirrored. The amazing thing is I read through a thread. Microsoft confirmed the bug and released a fix virtually immediately. And as far as I could tell, Dave was able to test and confirm things were fixed the next day after their confirmation. Is that what you guys saw? Did you guys read this whole?
Nobody was really sure how it got updated because Dave wasn't even sure that he did an update. So,
you know, it happened quickly. They identified something. And
The whole interaction was like less than 48 hours. And the fact that it was like acknowledged and a fix had either been rolled out and they said do it, or it was a new fix that was rolled out. I thought it was pretty amazing. So, and then I also had, another one, an issue. And I'm kind of curious if anybody out there is listening and they have this issue, send me an email because I need to verify this. So my issue is using Poll Everywhere audience response system. With duplicated or mirrored displays, Poll Everywhere works great. And then as of a few months ago, if I use Presenter View, the HTML5 that is on the slide, that's actually the Poll Everywhere web content, displays the live polling data. It's kind of weird. It actually like shifts and it sits partially on my screen in front of me, the presenter view screen, and partially on the audience screen. So it's basically not usable and you can't move it around. It's somehow the coding has kind of moved it around. I'm not sure if it's a PowerPoint coding problem, a Poll Everywhere coding problem, but the Microsoft PowerPoint team has logged it as a bug and hopefully we'll find a fix. And I just need, if anybody else out there has experienced it, I'd love to get some more feedback like, hey, these people have also seen the same thing. Because I had it happen on two different events and two different sets of computers. So I can say it's definitely either my setup is messed up, something's wrong. So yeah, two poll presentation presenter view things.
Which is all, you know, just for listeners, like let us know. And obviously let Microsoft know as well. But, you know, if you're having trouble getting through to them or getting acknowledgement or anything, I mean, you know, let us know because we actually, we have personal emails. And some of this stuff can get fast tracked. So,
Nolan, how about you? News things in the presentation world?
Yes, finally, after all this time, SVG support has come to the Mac, Office 365 only, of course. So what this means is now I do not need to do my gymnastics of exporting a file to Keynote using a custom third-party plugin. And that, by the way, thank you, Christian, for that plugin for so many years. It looks like you may not need to update it anymore. So I used to export Illustrator to Keynote and then convert that to PowerPoint to get Vector into PowerPoint. But now you can just drag and drop SVGs. So you can download them right from Noun Project or export them from Illustrator or whatever, drag them right in. And they function as just like on the PC as vectors. Now, the only weird hitch right now is some users are reporting that they also have the option to change it to shape, basically break it apart into actual shapes on the Mac. I don't seem to have that. Of course, one of those users also said that doing that crashed PowerPoint. So okay. So it's a little up in the, I don't know if that feature has been rolled out to everyone, but I assume it will be just like on the PC shortly. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, it's, you know, it's an update that has changed my workflow. Also, it is now supposedly on iOS as well support. Although a recent test this morning, SVGs were still rendering as raster on the phone, but we'll see. Microsoft assures us that it's been rolled out to iOS.
Okay. So here's another one, because we just talked, on the last episode and this episode, we're talking all about add-ins. I'm going to add one to our add-in list that wasn't a part of our conversation with the developers. I found this really cool list. It's on a website, Zapier. I will put the link. It's Z-A-P-I-E-R. But on their blog, they had an article about the best Word, Excel, and PowerPoint add-ins. I was like, oh, I should read that. You click on it, it's all about store add-ins. In other words, the Microsoft Store. Oh, good. So the web-based ones. It's got a pretty amazing list of add-ins. Now, I will say that the PowerPoint list is really minimal, but it did list some pretty cool ones for Outlook, Word, and Excel that I didn't know of. So I'll post it in there because it's just like another resource. It's just somebody else saying, hey, here's a lot of add-ins out there. And I think we're going to see these ones continue to expand. That's for certain.
Awesome. Nice. Well, speaking of add-ins, then we all know that NX PowerLite, one of our favorite add-ins, gave us an update to version 8.0 a few months ago. They've already updated that to 8.02. Basically, it's all the same functionality. It just adds languages, not just, you know, we're part of a global word. So now we can see English, Chinese, Dutch, French, German, Italian.
I've been waiting for Dutch for years. It is it is amazing, just not being a software developer, how much you need to think globally when you're developing software. I mean, apparently, you know, Microsoft gives their products out in every language around the world. And every time they come out with an update, somehow that stuff gets translated. Sometimes not always perfectly.
But, right, right. But yeah.
Okay, welcome everyone. We are continuing our conversation around PowerPoint add-ins. On the last episode, it was Nolan, Sandy, and myself talking about the add-ins we use as developers, as presentation designers, and those that we see others using. Add-ins are all about making the presentation design process faster, either automating tasks or adding functionality not directly available in PowerPoint, or add-ins that are used for converting a PowerPoint file to another output option, or integrating it with other software, or I should say other software integrating into the PowerPoint presentation, and so many other things. Well, this episode, the conversation is from the perspective of the add-in developers themselves. We had three amazing recording sessions with Steve Rinsberg of PP Tools, Gil Segal of Tools 2, and Jamie Garrock of YouPresent. Their insights and information is definitely worth a listen, and probably a re-listen, taking notes on everything that they just share. It's amazing. Now, as a side note, we, meaning Nolan, Sandy, and myself, brainstormed five questions to ask each developer, figuring we'd ask those questions and then put them all together into a single recording, and that should easily give us an hour conversation. Wrong. Talk with amazing experts, and you get, well, you get to question number two, and then you have an hour-long episode. So, without time for our tech or pro tips and our typical wrap-up session at the end, we have an hour-long episode right here, and you get to enjoy the first two questions that we ask these add-in developers. Your most popular add-in, and VBA versus COM versus the Microsoft Store add-ins. And then in a future episode, the presentation podcast will dive back in with these guys and get to questions 3, 4, and 5. So here we go. Start with having each of our amazing guests introduce themselves and give us some background.
Okay, so welcome everyone. We want to introduce one of our favorite developers, and instead of trying to do justice to him, we're going to let him introduce himself and tell us just a little bit about your background and how you came to the world of PowerPoint specifically, and even more specifically, developing add-ins and cool stuff for PowerPoint. So, Jamie, take it away. Tell us a little bit.
Well, thanks very much, Nolan, and thank you very much for the invitation to the podcast. I listen to this on a regular basis, and I think it's one of the best resources I have in my toolbox.
Thank you.
My name is Jamie Garrach. I'm currently sitting in day 151 of snow in Minnesota, thanks to my move from the UK. And I came to add-ins back in 2009, actually. I created a company based on my former experience of working with sales teams in my marketing life and seeing how they presented in a non-linear way. And I wanted to make it easy. So I created an add-in at that time called ActivePres. Things moved on and the company has evolved, and we now create a whole suite of off-the-shelf add-ins, but also specifically custom add-ins. And this will be interesting to talk about as we go through the different types of add-ins that are available. Specific add-ins developed for customers based on their requirements. You can find out all of what we do at upresent.co.uk, where we have a blog, plenty of free VBA code samples, and even some free add-ins, of which I'll speak a little bit in a bit later.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jamie. And by the way, you were a big part of the previous episode, and we did have a link to You Present, specifically the free stuff, because we referenced a number of those. So that'll be out there as well. So, hey, Gil, it's great to meet you. It's great to finally say hello in person. I know we've exchanged emails for quite a while, but could you give us like the 45-second elevator pitch so everybody knows who you are, name, company, where you're based, how long you've been developing add-ins and things like that?
Sure. So, hi, everyone. I'm Gil Siegel, the developer behind Tools 2. I'm based in Raleigh, North Carolina, USA. Tools 2 kind of started as some tools to help me do my job, my day job. And that was back in 2000. I've been developing it ever since, gradually growing it. First commercial release was in 2009, strangely enough, as version 4.2. Go figure. And then it's been growing ever since. Latest public version is now 7.1. And if you want to find out more information about Tools 2, you can go to my website, www.tools2.com. That's TOOLSTOO.com.
Steve, give us 45 seconds, the elevator pitch. So everyone, even though we all know you here and love you, tell us who you are, your company name, et cetera.
Well, I'd be happy to. Thanks, Sandy. This is Steve Rinsberg. I'm the owner of a company called PP Tools in Cincinnati, at the lower left edge of the state of Ohio in the USA, for our international folks. I'm not a urologist, whatever it may sound like. PP Tools is actually PPT, the universally loved abbreviation for PowerPoint, and then with tools tacked on to the end. And it's a long story how that came to happen, but the short version is, you now know why you always want to read the candidate names aloud before settling on one for your new enterprise.
So, Steve, I've never, ever put that in my head, and now it'll never, ever go away. Thank you.
You have to say it aloud. I didn't even realize it was going on until one day I picked up the phone and announced myself, and because I'd been announcing myself as Rinsberg Photography for years and years, because that's what I did. And then I switched over to completely switched out of that, and then it became PP Tools and nothing else. And I went, oh my God, what did I just say? Anyhow, I have been developing macros and add-ins for PowerPoint since 1997, the year Office 97 first came out. And the reason that was kind of a watershed for me was Office 97 included VBA, a programming language, and we'll talk about what that is a little later, I guess. But that was the year it included for the first time a programming language. And I'd been used to programming in another graphics program. So it just, bang, all of a sudden I could add functionality to the stuff that PowerPoint didn't have. I could automate existing functions or improve upon the stuff that PowerPoint had built in. So, for example, I have an add-in called Image Exporter. PowerPoint lets you export slides as images, but only at a fixed resolution and not a very high one. And it also kind of controls the names that your image files get, slide one, slide two. I don't think they even sort properly, come to think of it. But Image Exporter allows you to export very high resolutions images, and completely control how the images are named in the files. So it's, you know, it's not earth shaking, but if you need high resolution images, it's become quite a popular add-in. I think Troy will testify to that.
I use that. That is a daily used item because not only that, it lets you select the file output very easily, ping, JPEG. I don't remember the other options in there, and set the resolution, which is always great because generally I have a 16:9. I want to make sure it's ready for video. So I'm setting it to 1920x1080. I am a very big user of this add-in. I know I'm digressing and taking away the spotlight from you, Steve, but it's an awesome add-in enough. So, hey, let me ask this question, Steve, if you're okay.
Sure.
What is one of the most popular add-ins you have developed? The problem is see, I use like a whole suite of your add-ins and I could claim that they're all popular, but from your perspective, like what's a really popular one that's been, you know, either by feature or people just praise about it? You know, what do you see as a really, really popular one? I'd love to know.
Depending on how you measure it, whether it's the number of copies sold or the total amount of money that I get to pocket every month, it would either be Image Exporter that I was just talking about or PowerPoint, the Merge add-in. Actually, yeah, it's surprising. It's kind of an odd little thing that basically does very much like merge printing in Word, where you can take data that's in an Excel file and merge it into a sample or a template PowerPoint file. And basically for every record or every line in your Excel file, you produce either a new slide or an entirely new presentation. So you can produce just kind of off the cuff, customized presentations for prospects. I originally wrote it for my wife who was doing an award ceremony. And this is typically what people use it for. You've got all your award winners in an Excel file and a bunch of different bits of data about them, their name, the award they won, what year, and so forth. And in a matter of literally seconds, you could produce 200-300 slides, one for every record.
Wow. I actually did not know that existed.
No.
But I always tell all my trainees and anybody that you know I'm working with, that if they have any questions, if they're doing anything in PowerPoint that is taking a lot of time and they think or that they hope, they wish, you know, it could be done quicker, ask me, because I'll tell you either, no, that's just the way Microsoft is, or I can turn you on to a feature or an add-in or something. And I think the moral is there are tons of solutions out there for some of these problems. It's just a matter of knowing about them and finding them and letting IT install them for you.
So maybe what you need to do is tell your students, hey, go to PowerPoint Tools, go to Jamie Garrett, go to John Wilson's site, and when you find something cool, come back and tell me about it so I can pass it along, right?
So tell us, what is one of the most popular add-ins that you have developed? Or maybe it's the more popular feature within an add-in set, because I know a lot of your stuff has got multiple tools within it, I'll just say. So tell us something you've seen that just people have really resonated with. They really like it, they use it, and you feel incredibly proud of it.
I think this is a really good question, because the add-in that I'm going to talk about is called Text to Outline. And it came through one of the collaborations, and a lot of my add-ins come from talking to people in the industry. Nolan will know this. We spoke at the presentation summit and we created another one called Talk Time. This one came about talking to Gitesh Bajaj at Indesign back in about 2014, I think. And he had this article on his website where he talked about the ability to create vector outlines from text. So you've spoken about this on the presentation podcast before, but for anybody that doesn't know, you can write some text in a text box, add a new shape over the top of it, and use the combine tools or the merge shape tools, as they're now called, to convert what is essentially a piece of text in font to an editable, point editable shape in PowerPoint. And I read through this blog and he showed me all of the different steps which were required to do this. And I counted them up at the end. And when you include formatting the shape as well afterwards, because of course you're converting from text, so you've got text formatting tools in PowerPoint and you've got shape formatting tools in PowerPoint. When you include all of the additional formatting that you have to do, it's more than 20 steps. And this kind of thing always raises a question for me. It's a question of automation. And a lot of the utility type of add-ins which we see are all about automating a process. So if you find yourself sitting there doing the same thing over and over and over again, this is a fantastic opportunity for automation. And it gave me the idea to create text to outline, which allows you to click on a shape which contains text on a slide, click one button, and it does those 20 or so steps, converts it to an editable shape directly for you. So I extended that a little bit further and took it from the one shape concept and moved it through to being able to process all shapes containing the specific font across all slides within a presentation. And then thanks to Julie Terberg, who said, hey, it doesn't work with placeholders. And that really got me thinking as well. So again, it came back to the original question. Somebody says, I can't do this. The answer could technically be within an add-in. And I thought, okay, we can do this with a placeholder. All I need to do is to copy it, copy the text into a normal shape, hide the placeholder, and then process it in the same way and convert it to an editable piece of text. So it does all of that now. And the best thing about it is it's free. And it's been downloaded. I don't know how many times it's been downloaded now. I haven't checked for a while, but it's very popular. People love it. People, it's such a simple thing, a one button, single add-in in PowerPoint. And it's probably one of the most talked about and one of the most proud ones that I have in my toolbox.
Hey, Jamie, you said to me once that you hope, when we were developing TalkTime, that it ends up in PowerPoint's interface. I mean, you hope Microsoft basically takes it and uses it. Do you feel that about all your add-ins? And B, has that ever happened?
I think when I first started developing add-ins, I came from a marketing background. So I came from a very corporate environment that considered that everything had to be ROI-based. You had to have a return on investment. You know, you don't do anything without thinking about where's the profit, where's the money going to come from, what are the shareholders going to say about it? So I had a very different mindset when I first started in this industry. And now as I've grown to understand more about the community aspect of it, I like doing some of these freer things with a much more open mind to, well, you know, maybe one day one of these piece of functionality will actually end up directly inside PowerPoint. And if I come back to the original product that I first created back in 2009, which was called ActivePres, and it allowed you to basically build almost like a web style menu system directly within your slides so that you could navigate in a non-linear way. And I think that we've seen recently, last year, I think it was when Microsoft introduced the Zoom functionality and the ability to kind of navigate your content in that non-linear way. So in some respects, I think that some of the things that I was thinking about almost a decade now, which is a quite scary concept to think about in itself, some of those things have actually ended up in PowerPoint, whether they've added up and ended up there directly as a consequence of what I've been doing. I can't tell. I don't know. But I would love to see things like this text tool directly in PowerPoint. And again, your talk time idea where you set times that you want to present a particular slide for, I think that that is a very generic need across the whole spectrum of presenters. And that should really be something that's directly inside the PowerPoint itself.
So, Gil, is Tools Tool your, even though it consists of many, many different features and functions, have you developed any separate plugins or do you basically roll it all into Tools Tool?
So as far as PowerPoint plugins or macros add-ins or tools, everything, add-ins, yeah, everything that I do for PowerPoint is rolled up into Tools 2 today. I do have other macros and tools for various other Office platforms, some of which I do plan to roll out as perhaps Tools 2 for other Office platforms at some point. Probably the first one that I'll do is Outlook.
I like the sound of that.
Oh, fantastic.
So within Tools 2 for PowerPoint, what would you say is the most popular add-in that you think people use out of it?
Sure. So that's actually a little hard to say. There are 85 plus tools in Tools 2 today. I think it really depends on the kind of user you are and the environment in which you're working and what you're trying to do with Tools 2. So obviously, I think the core strength of Tools 2 is in its core functions, which are all the align shapes based to other shapes or format shapes based on other shapes, things like that. But there's no real That's not interesting, let's say. The more interesting stuff is the things that you can do in Tools 2 that you can't easily do in PowerPoint, or that would be very difficult to do in PowerPoint. So perhaps a great example of that, and I know Troy likes this particular tool, the Make Same Rounded Corner. Mm-hmm. So that's something that if you were to try to do in PowerPoint, it's actually impossible to do accurately in PowerPoint. There's no, you can kind of manually guesstimate and fidget with it and try to get it looking just about right, and maybe you'll get it close, but there's no way to get it accurate. PowerPoint just doesn't expose the tooling to do it manually and get it accurate. So with Tools 2, Make Same Rounded Corner tool, you can just do it with a single click and it's exactly right every time. So that's one example of tools that are popular just because you can't do those things in PowerPoint. Another set of tools that's kind of popular are the ones that just save you a lot of time. So these are things that you can do manually in PowerPoint, but would just take a lot of steps and would be very tedious. So perhaps the best example of that is the Add to Group. So if today in PowerPoint without Tools 2, if you wanted to take an existing group and add something to it, you would have to, you would basically lose all of the group's functionality, animation, layering, et cetera. So with the Tools 2 Add to Group, you just select a bunch of shapes, select your group, add, click one button, and everything's preserved. So with one click, you could save yourself hours of lost work that you lost your animation that you worked so tediously to create. So those tend to be really popular.
And I'll endorse everything you've said so far, because those are all of my most popular usage of Tools too, for certain.
Sure. And then another one that's very popular, at least with the users I work with daily, let's say, a lot of people have work in, let's say, corporate environments where they have large corporate layouts or masters where they have, or I should say templates really, where they have, lots and lots of layouts in there. And some of those layouts tend to be very large. They have images in them. And when you want to send out an email to somebody, which has just, let's say, one slide in it with some bullets, so it's just text, and you suddenly end up with a 15 megabyte attachment because of all that extra junk that's in the corporate layout. I shouldn't really call it junk, I guess. that's just bloat from the point of view of the email attachment, and you don't really need to do that. So with a single click, you can get rid of all the stuff you don't use. So that tends to be very popular in those kind of environments.
So I have a slightly different take on that exact same tool, because I use it, I'll say weekly, every time I'm at a large corporate event, I use it because I end up stringing together the whole master deck. So if there's 9 presenters, I'm going to put all 9 of them into one deck, mm-hmm. add sections, and I'm good to go. But at the end of it, and inevitably there's little edits, you know, that happen. Hey, could we change this? Could we add this? Let's reshuffle this. Well, I want to give each presenter back their slide set. And you just can't delete all the other slides, because then you end up with extra masters and you end up with all the other things. So I'm not actually emailing it, but I use the same feature. So I do the select and I use the extract selected slides. Is that the one you're talking about? Because you have the extract selected slides and email. Is that just no, make sure I'm talking about the same?
No, it's actually not that one. I'm talking about the one that's remove unused masters and image layouts or layouts.
Which is actually my step 2. So exactly. I do the extract slides, especially when I'm working in custom aspect ratio sizes, because you can't just add those slides to a new document because nope. I have a custom page setup. So I use the extract slides to delete everything but that. And then I use immediately following that, remove empty sections, because I had added sections and now I want to get rid of them all. And then I do a third click, which is the remove unused master slides. Then I hit save and I have a file to hand off to the, I should preface that with, when you first do the extract slides, it lets you give it a custom name. So it's kind of a 3-click process or 3 steps, and I've got mm-hmm. a file ready to send off with very little extra info in it. It's a really huge time saver, and I use it weekly, every single meeting.
So let me add a couple twists to that. So one is you can automate those 3 steps into a single click if you wanted to.
And to figure that out.
Yeah. So if you look in the user guide in the late for 7.1, there is there's a section there which talks about automating Tools 2 further. So that what you just described would be a candidate to do exactly that. You basically write a little macro to run those 3 tools in a single click. So you could do that. The other thing you might want to look at, not just to remove unused masters, but you might want to look at the removed unused masters and layouts. That will make your file a lot smaller. If all you're doing
is edits. I should say that's the one I do utilize.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I would actually like to see, just a personal request here maybe, is the remove empty sections. Mm-hmm. I would love it to be remove all sections, because it inevitably leaves me the one section that slide set came from. But when you're handing off a presentation with just a slide mm-hmm. deck, you don't even want that one section.
True. I thought about doing that several times. I keep coming back to that, but that capability is actually built into PowerPoint already. You can just right click on the sections and remove all. Yeah.
So. It's another click. Hey, thank you. This is all. So yeah, this is the problem with the, if there is a problem, it's a good problem. There is so much packed into this one ribbon of tools that I was curious to see what you'd say about what are the most popular, because it is incredibly wide ranging in what it accomplishes.
Yep. And the really crazy thing is I use pretty much every single tool in there weekly, almost all of them.
So Steve, not to get, well, I guess maybe to get very technical about it, there are a number of ways to program add-ins, and there's VBA and .NET, and there's also when you go into the add-ins, is this a PowerPoint add-in? Is it a .com add-in? Can you just sort of talk about what those are and do you program in all of it? What do you prefer?
Sure. Actually, I kind of, you know, since you were kind enough to provide me with a few sample questions, I thought this needed a little bit of careful programming at my end. You can make PowerPoint dance in a couple of different ways. You can write and run simple macros right from within PowerPoint using a built-in language that I referred to earlier, VBA or Visual Basic for Applications. Or you can write add-ins, which both of these sit inside PowerPoint and run from within it. You can also write programs in languages that run outside of PowerPoint, and we call it automating it, or just basically saying, hey, do this stuff. So you can write macros and some kinds of add-ins in Visual Basic for Applications, VBA, from right inside PowerPoint, and in most of the other Office programs too. And in fact, you can write VBA in PowerPoint that makes Excel and Word do your bidding and vice versa. You can write, so there's also ways of writing add-ins that run inside PowerPoint that you get through the Microsoft Store. And that's kind of a mix of JavaScript and HTML and CSS and a whole bunch of web technology. I've written a little program that I installed secretly on Troy's machine. He'll be able to click a button and make me talk about those later, Microsoft Store add-ins. And then you mentioned COM and VB.NET, so forth. You can write add-ins or external programs in any of Microsoft's .NET languages, which would be VB.NET, C#, and so on. And finally, you can write external programs to control PowerPoint in pretty much any programming language you like, VB6, Delphi, C++, are a couple of the more popular ones, but any language that understands a technology called COM, C-O-M, which stands for Component Object Model. And I did, in fact, have to look that up. I completely forgotten. And COM is kind of a way for programs like PowerPoint to say, hey, here are some features that I have that you can talk to and automate. And another language that understands how to talk to COM can say, oh, I get it. Okay. You want me to you're going to allow me to open a file and do this and do that and do the other, and then close the file. So, for example, I have written quite a few things in VB6 on a custom basis for customers who need some particular thing that VBA doesn't really want to do. So,
Well, Steve, you mentioned the Microsoft Store and its add-ins. So we know that they're web-based and they work directly in PowerPoint, and they're different from the locally installed add-ins that you develop. Tell us what the advantages are and some disadvantages of the store stuff versus the local stuff from your perspective.
Okay. There are really new, interesting technology that I think will be very popular long-term. One of the big advantages from the point of the view of the user, that's everybody but the developers, the kind of add-ins I talked about earlier in the external programs can only work on one or at most two platforms. So I can write VBA add-ins that work on Mac or Windows desktop versions of PowerPoint. But if you're using a web version or Android, iOS, tablet, whatever, no, that stuff's not going to work. But the new Microsoft Store add-ins work on any current version of PowerPoint, regardless of the platform. So a developer can write one add-in essentially and have it run on just about anything, but of course, only the current versions of PowerPoint.
Okay.
Another advantage is that we can get add-ins, the story add-ins from directly within PowerPoint by accessing the Microsoft add-in store. And the nice thing about that is, A, it's easy to do. We know that Microsoft vets them first, so we can be fairly sure that they're safe and that they're going to do what they promise to do. There's a really elaborate process they have to go through to get approved for the Microsoft Store. And again, you don't have to visit some other potentially unsafe website that you don't know anything about or download anything. Now, from my perspective as a developer, there are a few drawbacks. I mentioned they have to go through a fairly complicated vetting process. Well, if I add a new add-in, I write, I have to go through all that. So I can't get it out there to customers quickly, which in itself is not too bad, but it also means that if I find a bug in the thing, it actually has to go through 9/10 of that whole process again. So it means that I can't get a fix out in a couple days or even hours like I typically can with my other add-ins. It's going to take a while. There's also a 20% commission that Microsoft charges on every sale. That stings a little bit too. But the main reason though that I'm not even looking too closely at it yet, and I am going to say yet, but the future can hold a lot of change on this subject, but they just can't, the Microsoft Store add-ins just can't do very much. Microsoft has put a lot of work into bringing them up to speed in Excel. I think a little bit less so in Word, but in PowerPoint, they really don't do a whole lot. I can produce little functional panes that can go out on the internet and drag information down. But in terms of doing anything to an existing PowerPoint file, it's really not there to the point where I can do much of what my customers want.
Well, Gil, what kind of can you talk a little bit about sort of maybe getting to the technical VBA versus .NET, the COM add-ins? Like, how is tools to built and yeah.
Okay, so that's actually an interesting question, at least as far as Tools 2 is concerned specifically, because Tools 2 actually started as a VBA add-in. So from version 0, let's say, all the way through version 5, it was a VBA add-in. And then when I created version 6, I actually rewrote it, in .NET. So I ported it from VBA Visual Basic for Applications to VB.NET. So another flavor of Visual Basic. So it was a pretty direct port, but, it's a pretty relatively easy port. I mean, there were some adjustments that needed to be made, and a lot of restructuring took place in that time. It was a pretty major rewrite after all, but, I did port it from VBA to VB.NET, and I did that for a couple of reasons. One is from a timing point of view, we're talking now late 2013, I guess early 2014. So at that point, I was seeing lots of rumors about Microsoft's intended cessation of support for VBA going forward, how Office 2013 would be the last version that supported VBA. That turned out, of course, not to be true, thankfully, but those kind of rumors made me very uneasy and as an add-in developer. And then I was also challenged with 64-bit support. So to get to resolve both those issues with a single stroke, I ported from VBA to VB.NET. From a capabilities point of view, they're pretty similar in a sense. In other words, the way these add-ins interact with PowerPoint is through a set of interfaces that PowerPoint exposes. Let's call that the PowerPoint object model. So that just gives me a set of objects that I can work with, a set of properties and methods that I can work with on those objects. The object model is the same for both VBA and .NET. So that pretty much means that the capabilities of what you can do in both, at least as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, they're the same. There are some pros and cons though. VBA is maybe better suited for smaller add-ins. You can just—it's very easy to just pop it's built right into PowerPoint. You can just pop into the editor, create what you need to create, and you're up and running. It's also now portable. So I just found out that VBA supposedly runs on Macs identically to how it runs on PowerPoint for Mac as it runs on Windows, and so that opens up some portability options which didn't exist until now. So that's pretty exciting. VB.NET or .NET in general tends to be maybe a more robust development environment. So for the developer, the tooling we have to develop using VB.NET, specifically Visual Studio, has a lot more debug options and a lot richer editor and things like that. So it's much better tooling for the developer. So those are kind of the pros and cons.
So one thing I noticed, and I'm only bringing this up because I've noticed it about your ad and specifically over others, and I believe it's because it's a COM versus VBA, is that any tool can be right-clicked and added to the QAT as an independent button. I don't have to add the whole tool set. Is that a... I'm accurate on that, right? I can add them individually. And that is because it's a .NET or as PowerPoint looks at it, a COM add-in versus VBA?
I'm not sure about that. I need to go back and try that with a VBA add-in and see if that's still doable.
The VBA add-ins I have, what it does, it adds the whole thing down there, like the whole chunk. So where you have shape tools, it would add all the shape tools into it if it was a VBA, I believe. But anyways, it is a very cool little feature. I have certain ones of tools too on my QAT, and it's really awesome to be able to customize it even further for my workflow.
Sure. So yeah, so if that is indeed a difference, then that's a very powerful one, absolutely.
Okay, so going into the other realm now, because as you said, Microsoft had made this scary leanings towards removing VBA entirely, which, as we've heard from a couple of other developers, is one of the really cool things about, I would say, Office in general, is that it actually includes a VBA editor inside of it. You could do everything internal. It really kind of spurred on the cottage industry of add-ins because you didn't need a lot of external stuff. But now we have what we're calling the Microsoft Store and its add-ins. And again, we're now mixing the term what an add-in is. So it gets very, very confusing. And even Microsoft has renamed it a few times. But we know that they are web-based add-ins that work directly in PowerPoint or the other Microsoft Offices. Could you give us some, and they're different from the locally installed add-ins, such as Tools 2. So what's some of the advantages, disadvantages of this store-based add-in? What's your kind of perspective on them?
Yeah, so from a Tools 2 point of view, they're very challenging. So the challenge I see is that the new web-based add-ins are very limited in what they can do within the particular Office application they happen to be part of. So if we're talking about PowerPoint add-ins, the kind of rich interaction that Tools 2 today has with the PowerPoint environment, you just don't have, as far as I can tell, with those new web-based add-ins. So effectively, what I think I'm saying is that I don't think, as far as I can tell to date, that Tools 2 could have been written as a web-based add-in. So it's a non-starter from my point of view.
Yeah, we're kind of getting the sense that they are the store add-ins outside the fact that they're cross-platform. They're very portable, as long as you have an internet connection, obviously. They work anywhere. Well, they're very much content-driven, adding to your content. They're not so much production-oriented. And obviously, Tools 2 is such a production increase. And I kind of actually move it past, just as when we were talking about there, just the ability to extract slides and make them that's more of a conversion and an output functionality. It's not necessarily design production. So you're covering a lot of bases there. And I haven't seen really any of the store-based ones lend itself into that field, where they are doing all content or, things that will add to the slides.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. I think they are primarily content focused. Portability is a huge plus for them, absolutely. But you don't get that deep integration. So that's the downside. And unfortunately, from my point of view, when Microsoft launched these new add-ins, they discontinued their previous store where they did promote the old style add-ins. And so now we lost that avenue of promotion. So
yeah, the marketplace, for all of its downfalls, because they did allow a lot of stuff in there that shouldn't be there, in my opinion, it definitely was a good resource for users in general. And it's kind of a missing point right now. So on the technical side, I'm just simplifying this down to PowerPoint supports two programming options, VBA and .NET. And again, I'm a power user of all add-ins. I do not code, or I will never admit to anybody that I code. Which or both do you work in? And can you just like define it in some plain language differences between the two?
This plain language. I will do my best. I will do my utter best. Because at the end of the day, users don't really care what me and the other people who are creating these add-ins are. They don't care what language these add-ins are written in. All they want to know is, what does it do for me? What's it going to do much for my productivity, my creativity? How is it going to improve my daily life inside PowerPoint? So I've kind of drawn an analogy between an application add-in, and I should clarify here that we're going to talk about other add-ins, add-in types later on, but there are now three types of add-ins. We're talking about the first two, which both live on your computer. The first one is called an application add-in, and if you're in one of the Office Suite applications, then they will refer to it as the application name. So it's called a PowerPoint add-in in PowerPoint, an Excel add-in in Excel, et cetera, et cetera. So the application add-ins are written in VBA. The COM add-ins are written in .NET or C. And the application at the first add-in type has really been there for more than 20 years. It was way back in 1993 or something, I think, that Visual Basic for Applications, or VBA, came to fruition, and it gave developers the ability to extend the functionality of any Office application. So you can write some VBA code. These days, you can have your own buttons and other controls in the ribbon interface, and it was a really entry level, easy way to learn how to program and how to add functionality to Office. It's built in. It's there always, directly inside all of these Office applications. So you just press Alt F11, and up comes a VBA editor. So you don't have to install any new software to be able to write all of these programs. You can start with very, very simple macros, which might be one or two lines long to do something. And you can also, again, we'll talk about this a little bit later, run applications, add-in applications written in VBA on both the PC and a Mac. But one of the things that they don't do is allow you to interface with task panes. So if you've ever opened up the selection pane, the format pane, the animation pane, those are all examples of task panes. They're the panes that appear on the right-hand side of PowerPoint. And that's really where one of the big advantages of the COM add-ins came in. They gave you the ability to write applications which would add content and user interface elements directly in these user panes, these task panes on the right-hand side. So I think of the VBA add-in as the tool in my toolbox. It's a screwdriver. It's basically a hand-operated tool, very basic. It'll put screws into wood. But if you want to get a little bit turbo and do something a lot more powerful, then you probably want an electric screwdriver, and that's where I really see the COM add-ins. So they're both tools in the toolbox, and the COM add-ins are just a little bit more powerful. So we've actually created a product in the past which allowed you to bring in maps from Google, from the web, using a COM add-in. And the reason we did it, we chose a COM add-in for that particular application, was because we wanted the content to sit in one of these task panes. But if you want to align two shapes on a slide, you don't need the power of a COM add-in. You can do it with a VBA add-in. And I still talk, and I present and train designers and teach them the very basics of VBA so that they can improve their productivity. Again, you come back to that question. If you're doing something repetitively over and over and over again, you should be asking yourself a question. Could I just stop what I'm doing in the design mode, just write a few lines of VBA code, and increase my productivity tenfold or even more?
What about the Microsoft Store and those add-ins?
So the store, when I first started in this industry, there was a store which was called the Microsoft Office Marketplace, I think. I might be stretching my imagination.
Oh, yes.
And this goes back some way. And they had, this was even before Apple Store and Play Store on Google. So they had the concept of providing third-party publishers with the ability to promote through the Microsoft brand these types of add-ins. So the add-ins that live on your computer, you always have access to them, regardless of whether you're online or offline. And they had a store. But I think with the advent of Android, iOS, iPads, Mac, they had to take a different a different approach and think, well, how on earth are we going to create an add-in environment which is going to live on all of these different platforms, because they are all written in different languages, they all behave in different ways. And I think that given that you saw task panes coming into add-ins in the COM world, that really laid the foundations to develop the Office apps which we see and we're going to talk about in a while.
Okay, so three conversations with separate add-in developers, obviously at different times, all stitched together here. We had a ton of fun with this. So let's wrap up this episode.
All right. Well, I'd like to wrap up by just saying a thank you to a lot of listeners who I've been talking with. Ari and Brian and Michael is actually a new client who we're doing some training for his organization. So it's nice to get, you know, tweets or emails or whatever saying, oh, by the way, you know, I heard this, or thanks for this tip, or can you cover this? So I know I just mentioned a few people, but there actually been a lot more. So thank you guys for listening. Also, it always helps us with iTunes ratings. So if you do listen and have not given us a rating on iTunes, just go ahead and do that. That just helps us with spreading the word.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's good. And as I said, I think first real world job for a listener. So that's nice.
That's fantastic. Congrats. Well, absolutely. It's great to hear from a lot of people, so we know we're not just talking into a vacuum here. It's always cool. And this was part one of a two-part conversation with some very talented PowerPoint add-in developers. We definitely enjoyed our time with these three guys and learned a lot in the process. Thank you for joining us in the conversation. Have a great week with lots of great presentations. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out at www.tlccreative.com and the PowerPointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and also nolanhamescreative.com if you're looking for project design, presentation design, or training for presentation or data visualization. Give us a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.